Q&A session. You have any question and you want to report your meditation, you can actually ask and report your meditation. Anybody got any written question? Anybody? You want to ask something? You want to ask something? Yeah. You got any question? I'll report your meditation. Never mind. Pass the mic over. Yeah. You just report exactly how you meditate and you tell me your problem. Yeah. Yeah.
Brother, my sleepiness, throat and torpor very strong.
I know, but how do you meditate initially? How do you meditate? This morning when you wake up, then after you get ready, come in.
Walking.
You do your walking. After that, when did the sleepiness happen?
Walking is no sleepiness, but sitting down.
Yeah, the moment you sit, you're sleepy.
When I close the eyes, after a while, then I feel like sleepy.
Then what you do?
Try to wake. Try to stay awake.
Oh, okay.
And then a lot of some like consciousness and the dream.
Yeah, a lot of like you are sitting, you're like still sleeping, dreaming.
Yeah, dreaming, yes.
You have a lot of thought inside.
A lot of thought.
Okay, you can off the mic, You see, you have to understand all this so that you know how to meditate. And these are common happenings if you are new to the retreat or new to a group. The hindrance, they are very powerful inside. Most of you people who has not trained their mind, who has not developed the understanding of what mindfulness is. So sleepiness is a very common problem, especially with your case, because we wake up quite early here, 5:30. At home, maybe you don't wake up so early. So there could be a few reasons why this type of thing happens. The other thing is also, how come when you walk, you don't feel so sleepy? And the moment you sit down, that sloth and torpor or sleepiness come in. So what is meditation? What is it that you are doing here when you are in a retreat? So all these need to be developed with clear understanding. Then you know how to attend to it. Then you know how to develop it. So when you know that the hindrance are there, very strong, what must you do? Yesterday, first lesson, we already touched on that. You must develop your spiritual faculty, understand not? So if you find that your sitting is getting you nowhere, you might as well sit down, reflect, contemplate, open up the chanting book or the Dhamma book, understand? Then develop the faith, understand not? The saddha and the virya. Virya is the one that overcomes sleepiness. You must have faith. And you must have the strong spiritual zeal to understand that this teaching is very important. This is what you want. Because it can make such a great difference to your life. If you don't do that, the saddha and the virya cannot come out. Saddha can only be strong when you see the importance of this meditation, asana. When you see the beauty of this teaching of the Lord Buddha. Otherwise, the saddha and the virya cannot be there. Then sloth and torpor will continue to have a power over you. So, it's not to fight sloth and torpor, try to wake up, or you don't. You just stay with it. But the Buddha's teaching is very simple under Dhammanupassana. The first category of Dhamma that you have to be mindful of is the five mental hindrances. So when sloth and torpor is there, the Buddha say, you must be aware. Aware means what? Not only you know that you are sleepy, you know. Aware means you maintain awareness. Be with it. And then see what it happened. What happened? Sometimes it is the body too tired, you need to rest. Then you go and rest. Understand now? But don't make use of this as an excuse, oh, I need to rest, my body cannot take it. And then you don't have perseverance, you don't have faith, you don't have virya. But if you already understood that it's really body tired, you need to rest, then you rest. It's just like when you study. I remember, initially when you have not settled down, especially in the university, after the school holiday, the first semester break, second semester break, for us it's term. Then you come back from your holiday, your mind hasn't settled down to study. So you don't like to study. Then every time you pick up the book, you feel sleepy. So what I did is I just go and sleep. After I have enough rest, sleep, and then I come, wake up, I will study again. And then I realize I can study a little bit longer. But when I like the topic, I find that I really can go all the way and study. Then I will finish it. So later on you will find out for yourself is whether you have passion for what you do or not. If you have passion, you will not be sleepy. You can do until late in the night. Like people who like to listen to music or play mahjong, they can play until next morning. They are not really tired or what, but they love it. So sleepiness is something that you need to understand. It's part of the hindrance. Sometimes it's a bodily condition. It's nothing to do with the hindrance, because when the body is tired, it need to rest. And sleepiness is one of the way the body sign or signal to you to rest. So you rest. Understand? But don't use it as an excuse. Oh, Brother Teo say, I can go back and sleep. And then everybody in the room. Then you come for retreat for a while, you might as well sleep at home. So sadha and virya is very important. Spiritual faculties are very important, because without the spiritual faculty, you cannot understand spiritual things. You all smell something or not? Huh? Anybody put anything on the altar? The perfume smell is so strong. Anybody put anything on the altar? Nobody. Nobody bring jasmine or what? The perfume smell is very strong. How many of you can smell? Only one or two. No, it's a monk, it's not important, but there is a perfume smell very strong. Very, very strong. Very strong. You must have faith. So what is more important is sadha and virya will drive you. Without sadha, without virya, it's very difficult for you to progress. Okay? So purpose of meditation is very simple. We are here to train our mind to be mindful, to be heedful. Maybe after this I will go through with you on the section on mindfulness and heedfulness, so that you can develop better understanding of this Dhamma. So the Buddha said, under Dhamma Nupassana, first category of Dhamma is mindfulness of the hindrance. Then you stay with it, like sloth and torpor, you stay with it. Actually, with mindfulness, you can rest inside. Then you can like sleep. But when you are mindful, it's not a sleep. That dream and all those things doesn't come out, like what she went through. Because to your, when you are sleepy, it's like the heedlessness make you like daydreaming. Actually, this daydreaming is actually part of your sleep pattern. Understand? Then when you got nothing to do, you like that. Actually, inside here, Sankara, respond to memory, the thought keep on arising. Because your brain, it need to recover, recuperate. So Krishnamurti has a very good way of describing it. He said, when you live your daily life, you are, he didn't use the word heedless, it's the Buddha's word, you are heedless. And because you are heedless, he said, you created all sorts of mental activity and attachment and accumulation and everything inside there. So Krishnamurti used another word, he said, your daily life is not in order. Not in order means you don't have wisdom. You don't know how to attend to things. You don't know how to attend to sense or consciousness when they arise. And you are hardly mindful, heedful. So because of that, you live a life of disorder. You know what is disorder? In Mandarin is 乱七八糟, understand? Means like everything is like not in order, not systematic. You don't have clear understanding. You are not systematic. You are not attentive. You don't deal with problem. You don't resolve them then. Then you go and worry about them. You go and react to them. You go and complain and become miserable over them. You go and think and think and think and become miserable. You don't resolve them. Life is very simple. There are things that you need to attend to. And there are a lot of things that living beings call problems. To me, there is no problem in this world. Problem only arise, listen, when you perceive it with negativity. When you perceive it with fear, then it becomes a problem. But if you don't perceive them with negativity and fear, you just understand them for what they are, then everything is just the way they are. Understand? Where this is the reality. Condition like that, things will be like that. Why can't I accept that reality? Why can't I develop better wisdom to understand that reality? To be at peace with every reality. And then I act. Whatever I need to do to resolve issue or problem amicably, I resolve it. And how do we resolve it? Noble Eightfold Path. Do I have right view to accept the reality? To accept that probability is law of karma. Because everything, according to the Buddha, 99.99% is karmically conditioned. Born of it, here to it. So when you accept that, you don't complain. Understand not? You don't have to become miserable because this is what law of karma is about. In the past, you must have done certain things. That's why now, condition arise, you are subject to all these things. Why other people are not subject to? Because they have different karma. So when you understand that, you are at peace. The moment you are at peace, your mind state is very important. At peace means what? You don't react, you don't complain, you don't develop fear, worry, anxiety. So that type of mind is beautiful or not? Beautiful or not? If you have that type of mind, means the sensual desire, you will no more there, understand or not? Restlessness, no more there. There's no more hindrance. That's why you must attend to things with wisdom. You must attend to life situation with understanding. Then you don't react like before, understand or not? Worry about it. Complaining, reacting, arguing, fighting, wanting to be right. So all these are the action of deluded mind, understand not? The mind that doesn't have wisdom and understanding to accept the reality of the moment. Why can't you accept the reality of the moment and be at peace? Why must you have so much views and opinion about condition? Well, everything that arises and happens, you just want to react to it because, like the Buddha said, when things don't go your way because you have desire, craving, preference, then you cannot accept if it's against what you wish or what you want. Like this body. You fear, worry about you getting old, getting sick and die, but this reality was set in the sana. You got no choice. The reality is the reality. What you want is another thing. So when you cannot get what you want, suffering is the result. And when you understand this noble truth, you got two choices, I always said. One is to deludedly hold on to it, react to it and become miserable, like what most people do. The second choice is to accept that reality, confront it, then apply wisdom, noble eightfold path, right view, right speech, right action, right thought, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness and right samadhi, to deal with it, to resolve it and make believe. And then everything will turn out to be beautiful, blessing in disguise. Then there will be understanding. So all of Dhamma study or retreat or even what they call attending all these Dhamma classes and meditation retreat and training of the mind is to develop this type of understanding. When we have this type of understanding, we are beautiful. Our mind states are beautiful. And when your mind state is beautiful, the world becomes very peaceful. Yeah? Then you can live life. You can actually live life to the fullest. Then you can silence your mind and be with the moment, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. Because within the moment when you don't have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, the hindrances are not there. You are just aware, silent. Then you can experience all of the pristine beauty of nature. Everything that you want to experience. You can silence your mind to experience the great beauty of nature, the great vibration and chipping of nature. That's why you can also enjoy certain aspect of life through this understanding. The world of sight and sound. Have you really heard this sight and sound? With beautiful sight, vision, have you experienced them without fear, worry, anxiety, with a calm mind that is fully aware? Then with the good vibration of nature, sometimes very nice music, even the flowing stream, everything that you silent and perceive, like now the chipping of the birds, everything here, very beautiful. Then at night, when there is wind or what, that fongling, the bell at the rooftop, very beautiful, very high pitch. And all these are within nature. Why can't you perceive? Why can't you develop the awareness of it? Human beings' problem is because they think a lot. They create a lot of thought process. That's why your life is not in order. So Krishnamurti said, whenever you try to sleep or rest to meditate, the mind tries to find order. How does it find order? He has to release all your subconscious fear, unconscious fear, all your attachment, all those negative mind state, understand? Then, after normally you have a good sleep, what happened? The next day, you feel fresh, isn't it? Like your body recuperate, isn't it? Then your head like clear. Then you feel very good, understand? And that's how the body recuperate. But if you don't have a good sleep, you don't know how to rest. Very difficult for the body to recuperate. Then you will continue to have problem. Yeah. Then for those who have certain health issue or what, you can use meditation actually to bring about inner peace, inner well-being. Then it will actually strengthen your immune system. Because this positive, pure energy of metta, inner peace and inner well-being, is very, very conducive for boosting your immune system. Then when your faith is very strong, you can recover. And you have this very strong sadha and virya. You believe in the Buddha and his teaching. It will drive you to cultivate. Then you will see the result. The beautiful result. They will manifest. So all these are possible. It's up to you. Okay? So now sloth and torpor, I have already covered. It could be a bodily condition, or it could be because of your heedlessness. You need to understand it. You don't have enough faith, sadha and virya. So you need to read up. You need to contemplate, strengthen that faith. Then determine. Then if you have issue with sitting, you just bow or walk. Just go for a walk. Then maintain awareness. Maintain awareness is very simple. Be with the moment. Silence your mind. All these thoughts, when they arise, you say, enough. I will think later. I'm now in a retreat. I'm training my mind to be peaceful, to be silent, to be with the moment. Yeah. Then when you go for dinner or what, try not to talk. Keep it to a minimum. The moment you talk, you verbalize, you become heedless very fast, unless you already have the understanding and the mindfulness. That's why I say, be very mindful of everything that goes on. My teacher, Ajahn Yantra, he said, the highest meditation, you listen. We choose aware every action, every movement in the present moment. Now that is the highest meditation. It's in the note, Hasutta note. Don't have to remember. So can you be aware of every action, every movement in the present moment? Everything that arises and within the moment, you, your mind follow. As you come out from your meditation, you have to be aware that all the movement, even the turning of your hand, stretching, see, like Madam Ho now with the hand there. How come I can see? I don't purposely see because I'm silent inside. That's why I can see the phenomena. Even when I go for dinner, that mindfulness is within my nature. Then I said, then I can see all the movement. Even like now, just now, Mimi, the hand scratch. And many things that manifest, you can see. Even your blinking of your eye, you have to be aware until that. The moment you can be attentive to all these minor things, means you are cutting away the thinking. Understand? The moment you're aware, then you move on. Aware, aware, and aware. Then later on, this awareness also no perception. You just be with that thing. Then mindfulness will develop, the heedlessness will be less, then you will shift over from a heedless living to a heedful living. Then your life will actually become different. Then you start to see things very differently, where there is clarity. The mind that doesn't create all the hindrance has a lot of clarity. Because the hindrance are not there, you will return to your original mind state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. And when the hindrance are not there, means your spiritual faculty has developed, strengthened. Otherwise it cannot be that way. So all these, they are interrelated. Okay? Can follow, So for your case, you find out whether you're tired or not. Then if really it's a problem with sitting, you just do your bowing, walking. Then later on when you are fresh, you sit. After the exercise, what happened? You can sit or not this morning? Means you have not been developing your spiritual faculty. You totally don't have the spiritual faculty. After exercise, normally you can sit very well because you already train your mindfulness exercise. With all those trainings, somehow you cannot meditate. Means either you are really, really tired or there is some form of coming obstruction. I forgot about it. If there is coming obstruction, every time when you want to sit, you feel sleepy. Then a lot of things disturb you, like make you give up like that. So this coming obstruction, you have to deal with it. You have to ask for forgiveness, repentance. It's also in the Heart Sutta note. In front of the Buddha, you pay respect and you determine. Our chanting book also have on the second last page or what? Is it on the second last page? I better read to you. This chanting book is very useful. Asking for forgiveness, page 17. Maybe I cover this part first. Page 16 is the five daily contemplation. Just now I read to you. You remember this morning? This body of mine is of the nature to grow old, decay, for it's not gone beyond old age and decay. So they are all there. Then asking for forgiveness is also a very important one. That's why we incorporated this. So in front of the Buddha image, you ask for forgiveness. You determine strongly. Whomsoever from the distant past till now, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that this nature of mind had caused them any karmic negativity, misery, suffering, or misled, I would like to sincerely ask for forgiveness. May this sincere request for forgiveness be accepted by all. I vow to repent via following the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. We are striving on with heedfulness. If you do this, all karmic obstruction will go. If you are sincere, you have faith. And it's very simple. You determine. A lot of you may think that these are like very minor issue, but to those who really have karmic obstruction, and a lot of people got, I tell you, it's a major obstruction. It will block you from moving along the path of Dhamma. So you have to determine strongly by making this request. Then you have to make aspiration, making aspiration. By the power of all the meritorious action and deed that this nature of mind had cultivated, from the distant past until now, may it arise the causes and conditions for this nature to always avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise, until Nibbana is realized soon as possible. Then may the blessings of the Triple Gem, Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha guide and protect us always. Then you can wish for the well-being of all beings. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful always. So these are very beautiful aspirations. If you do it, determine your faith will be strong, then it will pave the way for Dhamma to actually flow in. So this chanting book is very useful. Then our morning chanting also, that simple guide, last page, to doing personal puja when you are at home or in a group. After your puja, you make this aspiration. It's very powerful. Don't underestimate your simple offering. You do it with faith and understanding. It doesn't cost you much to buy some incense, candle, offer some fruits, flower to the Buddha, clear water. All these are very meaningful. Then you invoke the power of merits and make this type of aspiration that paved the way for you to develop all the spiritual faculties, for you to develop all the wholesomeness that will lead to the enlightenment. So all these are very beautiful. Okay? Yeah. So now you can turn it, bring up your heart sutta. Maybe I'll go through the section on heedfulness. Okay. Good. It's on chapter 2. Maybe I quickly run through chapter 1. Then, you all didn't smell. The perfume is so strong. No. Is it the candle? No, the thing come, go, then come again. And it's very strong. It's like Anandagiri. That night when we do the thing, suddenly it's so very strong. Never mind, not important. More important is the understanding that you can develop. Okay, page 1. Heart Sutta, lesson 1. First one is about definition, paramita. The paramita is a Sanskrit word meaning crossover. In Mahayana Buddhism, paramita means a perfection or a virtuous quality practiced by a bodhisattva in the course of his spiritual cultivation. Prajna is a Sanskrit word and panya is a Pali word. The meaning is wisdom. So for those who are new to the teaching, this will help you. Then the heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta, which is the Heart Sutta, you have to read through. This is the whole of the Heart Sutta, just a few paragraphs. Not that many words, but all the profound wisdom are there. So I just read through the one in English. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was cultivating the profound Prajna Paramita, he illuminated the 5 skandhas, or aggregates of form and mind, and saw that they are all empty, and he crossed over beyond all suffering. This 5 aggregates of form and mind, I will explain to you all later. How many of you don't understand what the 5 skandhas or 5 aggregates of form and mind is? How many? Everybody understand. So I no need to explain. You better put out your hand if you don't understand. Nobody don't understand. The 5 aggregate of form and mind. Are there? Because people don't understand. You better put out your hand. Then I will explain. Okay, you listen. The Buddha's teaching is very simple. You can follow. Anybody can follow. Provided you are attentive. So according to the Buddha, he said, if you want to understand who are you, what are you, you have to inquire. So as a human being, what do you have? The first part is the physical form, isn't it? So this one is the physical form. Then what else do you have? What else do you have? What is this fellow inside there? There is a consciousness, there is a mind, okay? So this one is mind. So the Buddha said, you consist of these two. So this one is a human being, Because we are more familiar with human beings. So we take human being as an example. So this human being got a physical form or physical body and he has a mind. So the Buddha said you are the form and mind. So every time you read in the text, the form and mind refer to these two. Okay? But this form got 2 aspects. One is the physical form, then the other one is the what they call mental form. So maybe I will write it in a more clear way. This form, the Buddha subdivide into 2. The first one is physical form. These are all in the notes, you don't have to write down. Then the second one is mental form. Okay, then the Buddha said, the mind, if you want to understand what this mind is, you have to inquire, what can your mind do? What can your mind do? Of course you can think, you think a lot. What else? You can feel it, like here weather very cold, you can feel it, hot and cold, pleasant, unpleasant sense of experience. So there is this ability to feel. Feeling. Feeling is one of the aggregates of mind, because this is what your mind can do. So feeling in Pali is called Vedana. Vedana. Yeah. This one in Pali is called Rupa. Form is called Rupa. Rupa is form. Then the second thing that your mind can do is, apart from feeling, it can perceive things, isn't it? How do you know this is a Buddha image? Through your mental perception, seeing consciousness, then through memory you call, then you perceive it. So perception is the second aggregate of mind. You can perceive them. So perception is in Pali called Sanya. The third aggregate is what? Sankara is the Pali word. This is mental activity. Everything that your mind can do is sankara, including your mental intention, all of your mental states, whether peaceful, unpeaceful, like deceitfulness, cunningness, violent, anger, and all those things, lust, craving, desire, consciousness, they are all part of mental states. So mental activity include thinking, planning, scheming. The mental state include all your emotion, good and bad, even your peace, your calmness, your concentrated mind. These are all your mental state, mind states. Then you can actually arise mental intention, cetana. So all these are part of sankara. Then sankara, you can actually define as everything. Everything that your mind can do. Actually, sankhara is inclusive of these two, feeling and perception, part of sankhara. That's why finally, in order to understand this, it's very simple. The fourth aggregate is what? The last one. What else can your mind do? You can become conscious of things, isn't it? So the Buddha called it consciousness or vijñānaṁ. Consciousness means you have your senses. You can be conscious of what you see, conscious of what you hear, smell, taste, tactile, feel, and think. So six types of consciousness are possible. So consciousness is called vijñānaṁ. So as a technical person, the Buddha actually can define to you what this mind is all about. He said, this mind is actually consciousness. Consciousness plus is content. Anasana. He called it the content of consciousness. So what is the content of consciousness? What does the living being input into the consciousness? From your nature, pure awareness, understand not? The true mind is just aware, understand not? Can you follow that? Spacious awareness, awareness is everywhere. That is actually pure consciousness. Means consciousness without content is awareness. Understand not? What is content? Your perception, your feeling, your mental activity, these are your content. That's why I say awareness or mindfulness is just awareness before the knowing, before the perception, before you feel, before you arise thinking. So pure awareness, the pure consciousness without content is actually awareness or sati. So sati can be defined differently. Sati equals to pure consciousness. without its content. So this consciousness, the external one, this pure one, is like a receptacle, nasara. Receptacle. You know what is a receptacle? It receives things, like a container, nasara. You pour water into it, there is a content inside the container, nasara. So this sati or pure consciousness without its content is actually the receptacle. Then the content of consciousness which you input inside. What are the things you input inside? Yeah? All of your what? Your emotion, your anger, your hatred, your perception, and all of the thinking, your thought, your idea, your views, your opinion, all of the mental heedless thinking. That's why, because of that, your content of consciousness, if it's not in order, it's full of hindrance, full of evil root, full of rubbish, anasana. So what you input into this thought is very important. If you have loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, generosity, kindness, goodness, sincerity, honesty, wholesome state, then your thought becomes beautiful, understand? That's why the use of thought is very important. The use of thought that has right view and wisdom will introduce the right content within, then thought becomes beautiful. If you input rubbish inside, thought becomes wrong thought. And you know what is wrong thought or not? Very simple. Any thought that you arise that lead to fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, selfishness, unhappiness, and fear, these are all wrong thoughts. And then you go and check yourself throughout the day when you are living life. Most of the time, are you happy? Are you peaceful? If you are not happy and not peaceful, means they are all wrong thoughts. If you still got a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, means you keep on arising wrong thoughts. Your only wrong thought can condition you into those unhappy state, miserable state. Wrong thoughts are associated with suffering, the evil root, the hindrance. What are right thoughts? Yeah? First is to identify wrong thought. Then what are right thought? Right thought are wholesome thought. Thought that bring about harmony, love, compassion, understanding, kindness. Can you arise those thoughts? Just like at home, when you love your children, you care for them, you sacrifice for them, you have joy, you have contentment, you have love. Those are wholesome thoughts. But if you have motive behind all your action, then this wholesome thought is not in accordance with nature's law. They are only wholesome according to you, anasana. Because there is attachment behind, anasana. When there is love, there is no anger, no hatred, no opposite. But human beings' love is, when you listen to me, when everything go my way, I love you. When you have use for me, I love you. But when things change, then that love can overnight or within that split second instant be gone. So what type of love is it? So fragile, can just reverse. Means there is no true love. True love is universal. Universal love without opposite. Yeah. Whereas the mundane, worldly love is tied to motive, advantages, and other things. So content of consciousness is the other three aggregates. So these are the four aggregates. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. Yeah. So the Buddha said, you add this 4 plus 1. This one is 1. then you are the five aggregate of form and mind. Understand not? The form, the first one is mental form. Second one is, first one is physical form. This physical form. Second one is the five aggregate of form and mind within your mind. Every moment of consciousness, when you are conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you tactilely feel and think, the Buddha said there is also the five aggregate of form and mind. But these are the five mental aggregates of form and mind. Five mental aggregates of form and mind. As you all know, the mind has only four aggregates. Understand? Then how does the form enter the mind? Through what? Through which aggregate? Perception. How does the external form, like this Buddha image, enters your mind? Well, you perceive it, isn't it? So this is the one. Perception is the one that brings the form into the mind. So perception, sanya, is very important. This is the one that brings the external form into the mind. So when you understand this, then you know every consciousness also have its own five aggregate of form and mind. And when the Buddha teach the dependent origination, he's talking about this five mental aggregate of form and mind. He's not talking about the first aspect. As a human being, this is the first aspect of the five aggregate. So this five aggregate of form and mind. Form and mind. The human being is the first aspect. So this one is the first aspect. This one is the second aspect. Second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. So now you understand, Okay? Understand not? You know why the Buddha called the human being or the living being the five aggregate of form and mind? And Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, when he meditated, when he was cultivating this prajna paramita, perfection of wisdom, he illuminated this five aggregate of form and mind. Means with wisdom light he illuminated. Then he realized that they are all empty. Empty means what? Non-self. No reality. They are conditioned arising, causal phenomenon. That's why you cannot hold on to it, cling on to it, grasp on to it, and say, this is I, this is mine. Because dependent on condition, they cease to be. Dependent on condition, they arise. Dependent on condition, they continue to exist. Like this form in mind now, it exists. But this is not me. Since birth until now, I cannot deny that there is this form in mind following my nature. But this form and mind, this segment of life, this nature carries this form and mind, understand, which you all may call predatio or whatever. But this is not me, understand. This is karmically conditioned out, a vehicle and a tool for me to come to this world to do what I need to do, or to do what I have to do. Yeah. Of course, there are a lot of conditions behind. Most of you, most people, if they are not cultivated, they don't have a choice. Karma, they will manifest. And you will continue life after life for eternity until you become enlightened. You continue to take birth, rebirth, born of your karma, head to your karma condition. So this five aggregate of form and mind is what the Buddha called born of your karma. Hair to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And this five aggregate of form and mind is what it is because of karma. So this is the one subject to karma. Understand? And this one is not you. Because there is a true nature within, which is not a being, not a person. That nature is much, much more mightier. That is unconditioned, the eternal nature. And that one is connected to the form and mind. But because your mind thinks a lot, you cannot meditate, you cannot develop sati, the silent mind, to be with it, to connect to it. That's why you cannot experience all those things that are beyond thought. That's why the Dhamma that the Buddha taught, he said, is akaliko. Akaliko is this Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond mind. Can only be realized by the wise Ishwara himself. So that is the reason. Okay? So, okay, huh? Any question you better ask if you still don't understand? Can follow that? Quite difficult on that one. quite difficult means you don't have past affinity. Don't worry, just allow it to be. It's just to understand who you are and what you are. If you want to know more, you read this green book. This was based on a talk I gave on the Thursday class. Because this is a topic that a lot of people cannot understand. And many, many people actually had wanted this understanding. But that day was the condition before we went for Taiwan trip. And as I promised the Karanamita, I will speak on this. Because there are many cultivator Karanamita who actually want me to share this during the early days. Then later on also. Because people just cannot understand who they are, what they are. This so-called human being, to them, this form of mind, this so-called human being is very real. How can it not be me? Everything is so real, so tangible. I can feel, I got emotion, you say not me. I want to do anything I can, I want to run, I can run. I want to jump for joy, I can. I want to commit suicide also, I can. Why you say not me? Understand? Then you go and find out for yourself. If you think it's you, then by all means, enjoy your atta. Then see whether you become miserable or not. Because it's very easy. Through mindfulness, you can see very clearly this guy is not you. Understand? You say you can jump. You can do everything. Then why not you? Understand? Then, what are you trying to tell me is ability to control means that thing is you. You agree or not? Because you can control this form of mind. You want it to run, you want it to laugh, you want it to do anything you can. You see, that's why it's me. Understand? And then I tell you, you drive car. You can control your car. You want to speed, you speed. You want to brake, you brake. You want to turn, you turn. That car is you. Is that car really you? Ability to control doesn't mean the car is you, understand? You see that clearly or not? When the car is without petrol, when the car got certain part not functioning, even if you are the Formula One champion, you ask him to drive the car doesn't move anymore. Understand? Similarly, this physical body, form and mind of yours is the same. You go to hospital, you will witness. Those who are paralyzed from the waist down, you tell them, hey, walk. They cannot walk anymore, understand? Because this body is like the car, not in proper order, doesn't perform the function of a car. So this body is like a vehicle to take you around. The consciousness is like a driver that drives the car, understand? So in the car and the driver analogy, you see very clearly the car is the car, the driver is the driver. But how come when this consciousness is trapped inside, you are so foolish, you think both belong to you? In the case of the car, very simple. Accident means what? Send it to a mechanic, claim insurance. Do what you have to do. Of course, a lot of people who are foolish, they feel very, very unhappy. You new car? Why you won't bang me? Why this guy so untactful? So your mind thinks it owns. But do you really own that car? It's only in a registration card or your name there because you pay or you take a loan. Does it really belong to you? It never belongs to you. It's just condition. You have the condition to buy it. Then the law recognizes you own. But if it's the car damaged, you don't cry over it. Maybe you feel unhappy because money involved. But how come this physical body, when it gets into problem, disease, sickness and all things, just like the car get damaged, you become miserable. You become so sorrowful. Then you got so much fear that you may die. For the car, beyond economic repair, you condemn. Then you buy a new car, provided you got money. It's all described in the Green Book. That's why it appears to be like it is you, but it was never you. It's only element, no knowing. How can it be you? But because the condition, when the form and mind come together, it's like the car and the driver come together, then you can actually call it by a name. Then it arises, understand? Actually, it's a combination of two entities. Just like in the Buddha's time, he taught the monk differently. He told the monk, you see the bulokat, you remember bulokat? He said, what do you see? All the monks say bulokat. Okay, good, he said. Tear it down, means separate the part. Take the wheel, the axle, the carriage, everything, dismantle it. And then the Buddha say, what do you see? Any more bulokat? No more. He said, okay, now you assemble it back. And then the bulokat appear again. So the Buddha said, what did you learn? What did you learn? How does the bulokat comes about? Who created it? You need God or not? Do you need God to create that bulokat? You need God or not? Means bulokat comes about through what? Condition. When the parts come together, when people assemble it, then finish, because it performs a function, you give it a name and a concept, and then exists already, arise already, bulokat. The form and mind also the same. Chemically conditioned out, arise already, human being. Why can't you see? When these conditions are separated, then the bulokat is dead and gone. So what is the condition that brings about this human form or human being to come to life? The Buddha said three things. First, there is a physical body like the car that can function in order. Then there is a consciousness trapped inside. Then apart from that, you need karmic force, life force. That's why this karmic force is your supportive karma that pumps your heart. And when these three come together, the form and mind exist, sustain. But any of these three gone, the form and mind is gone. The other good analogy is the candle. You know what is a candle? You light candle before that. So when you have a candle that is so long, when you light that flame, means that candle like alive. Like that is your life, okay? So you think the candle so long, oh, I'm going to live so long. You agree or not? Are you going to live so long because the candle is so long? What happens if suddenly the wind comes? The flame is gone. Then where is the candle? No more condition to light. And just like your life. Life force, no more. Law of karma, destructive karma come. No more life force, gone. Then sometimes, the karmic force still there. Supportive karma still there. You burn halfway, there is a defect in the wick. Understand? Then what happens? Then you hear the sound, like, water like that, then suddenly no more. See? Because of the faulty wick. So your DNA, when it comes because of karma, certain DNA, the time span is like that. So it will be gone. So you cannot be sure that the whole of this candle will be burned. Because it's all condition arising. If the supportive condition are not there, anytime it can just disperse. So when consciousness separate from this physical body or physical form, you call it dead. Who die? What die? You never inquire. You never meditate. Understand not? So this is one aspect of the Dhamma that you can develop understanding, and it will help you tremendously. But this is seldom taught, not even in the written text. So far, I haven't seen anywhere people able to write about it or talk about it. So to understand the five griya form and mind is very important. Then we go on so that you can understand. Then Kuan Yin Bodhisattva says, Sariputta, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. For form itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is form. So too are feeling, cognition. Cognition is your perception. Formation is your sankhara, activity of mind, and consciousness. Sariputta, all dhammas are empty of characteristics. They are not produced, not destroyed, not defiled, not pure, and they neither increase nor diminish. Therefore, in emptiness, see the word is in emptiness, when you penetrate through emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no perception, no activity of mind and consciousness. No eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, and no mind. No sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, object of touch or dhamma. No feel of the eye up to and including no feel of mind consciousness. And no ignorant or ending of ignorance. Up to and including no old age and death or ending of old age and death. There is no suffering, no accumulation, no extinction, and no way, or the Noble Eightfold Path, and no understanding, and no attaining. This is the Four Noble Truths. Because nothing is attained, the Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid, and he leaves distorted dream state far behind, ultimately Nirvana. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain Anuttara Samyat Sambohi through reliance on Prajna Paramita. Therefore know that Prajna Paramita is the great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It is genuine and not false. That's why the mantra of Prajna Paramita was spoken. Recite it like this. Gate gate paragate parasam gate bohi swaha. So the next page is the explanation of the five aggregate of form and mind. And now you can understand, the five aggregate of form and mind. The Heart Sutra in Mandarin, those who know Mandarin you can read, is also beautiful. Quan Zi Zai Pusa and all those things. So the five aggregate of form and mind, there are two aspects like I explained just now. First aspect is as a human being, where the rupa, the physical form, is the rupa. Then the second aspect, as the five mental aggregate, where the mental form, or external form, brought into mind by the aggregate of mental perception or sanya. So now very clear. Then you can have the diagram to help you. What is feeling? What is perception? What is consciousness? What is sankhara? So the form got two. Mind got four aggregate. Form is one aggregate but got two aspects. Then next page continue. Vedana, sanya and sankhara, they are the content of consciousness. Just now I already draw on the board. All that the mind can do, they become your content. Whatever feeling, emotion, mind state, perception, and thought, views, opinion, etc., that you input into that pure consciousness, they become the content of consciousness. Then I define sankhara. Sankhara equals mental formation, mental activity, mental state, mental intention, mental planning, scheming, etc. Everything that the mind can do, including feeling and perception. then consciousness of vijñanam is equal to the receptacle or the container that hold on to that thing. So when you create a thought, what happens? At first, your mind is actually oneness, spacious awareness. That's why I say mindfulness, there are two types. First one is general spacious awareness without a center and a sadhana. But how you create a thought? Because through your senses, you focus on a sadhana. Like when you see something or you hear something, you focus on that, isn't it? Focus means what? The spacious awareness, you suddenly zoom in on that thing that you are perceiving, that small area of consciousness. Initially, it's pure consciousness, but the moment you perceive it, you through your memory and your conditioning input the content. That's why like and dislike, beautiful, ugly, and all those things went in already. Then your mental intention, that's why the content of consciousness got kusala and akusala, whether wholesome or unwholesome. Now all these things go in already. So what is thought? Limited, anasana. Just one small space of consciousness, the content went in, then it become a thought. That's why thought is limited, so narrow, anasana. Then thought can only know itself within its content. The other thing it cannot see, that's why it cannot have the direct seeing. It cannot see things as they are, because it's preoccupied with the content of consciousness. Anasana. That's why thought is limited. Thought cannot see things. Thought is egoic. Anasana. Thought can only label and create concept and idea of things. It's never the reality. But thought is very powerful. Anasana. Thought can take you to Holland and come back without you knowing it. And you somehow believe thought. Because thought keep on telling, hey, that guy did this to you, you know. You better do something to that guy. Oh, you all the while follow one another. Hey, your sister cheated you, or your husband cheated you. But you believe the thought, then you become very angry, emotional, and you lost your life because you believe the thought. Why do you want to believe the thought when you don't have wisdom? Thought being egoic, create all those funny things. But when there is wisdom, then thought become different. Thought become your servant, it serves you. You use thought to live life, to experience all of the beauty in life. Then no more the other way around. The other way around is thought become your master, it control you. Your life destiny all depend on thought. But you depend on thought to tell you what to do. That is delusion. But when you understand, then you realize, hey, that nature that has the understanding, it can use this form of mind. And then these two serve. That true mind, with that understanding, become the master. Then it will tell this thought and this form what to do. And then the mind become beautiful, not afflicted anymore. And that's how you understand life. That's how you take over your life destiny. But that one is not a person. That one can have the direct seeing to arise the wisdom for you to understand clearly the phenomenal world as per the Heart Sutta. And then you use that understanding to live. Then when this form and mind have this understanding, no longer deluded, that's why this form and mind don't suffer anymore. And then you can say, this form and mind is enlightened. Yes. But that form and mind is not you. That's why the enlightened being will know. There is no such thing as this form and mind is I enlightened. No such thing. This form and mind enlightened, yes. But it's not me. That's why anatta, empty nature, non-self. So this understanding is very important. Okay? For those who can understand, I rejoice. For those who cannot, be patient. Take your time to learn or develop understanding. Because this type of teaching or understanding is very rare. And actually, many beings, they look forward to understand this. So if you are serious, if you have faith, you determine, you make aspiration to develop understanding, then you can become beautiful too. Okay, we move on. Part 2. Oh, sorry. consciousness and vijnana, the receptacle or the container. Then you have the six sense door, huh? The five physical sense and the mind door, six. Your eye, your ear, nose, tongue, bodily tactile, and mind door. So your eye can make you conscious of what you see, correct or not? Your ear can make you conscious of what you hear. That's why the world of sight and sound come from these senses. Without the seeing and the hearing, you can never experience consciousness of that beauty. That's why sight and sound, they are there throughout the phenomenal world. But why can't you perceive them? Why can't you experience them? Why can't you live, truly live life, to really, really experience life to the fullest and live life to the fullest? Then we move on. Meditation is an important essential dhamma. Then 2.1 again, the five mental hindrances of mind. So the five mental hindrances of mind that hinders the mind from becoming peaceful and aware within are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or sleepiness and lethargic mind. That's why they are all here. No need to write any notes. Restlessness of mind and doubt. To counter it, we only need to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculty. That's why you don't go and suppress, control, and fight it. The opposite five spiritual faculties are sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya. So their English equivalent and translation are all there. Samadhi means collectedness and unwavering mind. Panya is wisdom. Sadha is faith or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. Virya is spiritual zeal or tenacity. Sati is mindfulness or awareness before the knowing. Then the five daily contemplation leading to initial wisdom I have covered. Then the meaning of craving, meditation and attachment or clinging is very important. Craving equals wanting things your way, reacting to, which is also equal to craving leading to suffering. Understand? This is the whole of the evil root of greed. Then meditation. You can learn meditation through hearing, listening, reading plus contemplation and the direct seeing leading to awakening. Hearing and listening and reading is the first phase of wisdom, or what the Buddha says, Sutamaya Panya, during the Buddha's time. When you hear his teaching, through this hearing, you can awaken. There's the time of wisdom. Then you can, after that, reflect, contemplate into it, to develop the second type of wisdom. They call Chintamaya Panya. Then after that, you silence your mind and cultivate Bhavana or meditation. Then the wisdom born of that cultivation, especially the four foundation of mindfulness, that is the third type of wisdom, Bhavana Maya Panya. Then what is attachment? Attachment is grasping or clinging via delusion and evil conditions, suffering. Okay, next page, Heart Sutta 2. 1.1 are the 10 perfection or paramitas of the Theravada tradition. This is what Engby was chanting to you all in the bus. The three, what they call cycle to perfection of these 10 paramitas. So they are dana, sila, nikama, panya, virya, kanti, satya, aditana, metta, and upeka. The English equivalent translation are dana is generosity or giving or offering. Sila is morality or precepts. Nikama is renunciation. Panya is wisdom. Virya is spiritual zeal or strong tenacity or energy to cultivate. Kanti is patience. Satya is truthfulness. Aditana is aspiration or resolution or self-determination. Metta is loving-kindness. Upeka is equanimity. These are the 10 perfections that the Bodhisattva who is intent to become a Sammasambuddha cultivate and perfect, must cultivate and perfect. Then Mahayana actually modify it. They call it the six perfection or parameters of the Mahayana tradition. Yeah. They only focus on six, which is the same enough. First one is dana, same, yeah, giving or generosity. Kanti, which is patient, also the same. Then they have this extra dhyan or samadhi. They cultivate a lot of samadhi. Then precept is the same, sila. Virya is the same, spiritual zeal or vigor. Then panya is wisdom. So the only difference is they have this samadhi. Samadhi actually is equanimity up there, upekha. Upekha is samadhi with wisdom. That's why the 10 perfection, finally this samadhi, they must perfect until it is samadhi with wisdom. Then the words of wisdom by the Buddha extracted from Dhammapada verse on avoiding all evil, do good and purify the mind via having the right view in regards to the law of karma. These are the Dhammapada verse, important one, the words of wisdom. There are 423 Dhammapada verses on truth that the Buddha spoke. But within these 423, there are about 7 or 1 which are very critical, very important. So I have already highlighted them, then printed them out. Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. Can you all read? Read aloud. So when you read this and understand this Dhammapada verse, what must you do? Because your life, you have a choice, understand? Or? If you want to have suffering, then continue to be heedless and do like what you are doing now for most people except the cultivator. If you continue to be heedless, means what? You couldn't care about life, understand? Or? Heedless people don't care, isn't it? Because they are so heedless. You say, don't waste your time. Don't be foolish. Don't go and do all this that lead to downfall, that leads to negative karma. They are so heedless, they couldn't care less. They say, this is life. They enjoy life. So to them, they just want to do all those things. Where to them is enjoy. And because of ignorance, they didn't know that this is the cause of suffering. Then you check this Dhammapada verse 1. You can put to test. The Buddha said your mind is very important. That's why mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. And when mind arises, everything arises. That's why the Mahayana got this very beautiful saying, each year wei xing zao, means mind create. From mind it arises. That's why you have to take care of mind. If you don't take care of mind, you become miserable. Then the Buddha said, if you were to use this mind this way, if you act, speak, and think with a wicked mind or unwholesome mind, what will happen to you? Suffering will follow you. Understand not? Like the wheel that follow the hood. And why suffering follow you? Because the wicked person with the unwholesome mind, they have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Understand? Greed, hatred, and delusion are the three evil roots. They are the roots of all evil. So every time when you manifest your consciousness, if you input the content with these three things, it will make you very evil. That's why you will fall. Your karma will fall. You will be afflicted. That's why suffering will follow you. So your life, if you still don't know how to choose and still decide to be heedless, then that is your choice. No problem. Go ahead and do it. See whether you really, really suffer. If you have enough of suffering, then you better wake up and read Dhammapada verse 2. Read Dhammapada verse 2.
Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief.
See, if you want to have happiness in life, you only need to develop a wholesome mind, a pure mind. But here, they miss out something, you know, the three evil roots. They never write that thing down. So when I teach, I always share. When you act, speak, and think with a pure and wholesome mind, that is free of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. When you don't have those roots, then you are beautiful. That's why happiness will follow you. And you can put to test. When you are angry, does it cause suffering to you and others? You ask yourself. And when you act with delusion, out of fear, out of selfishness, does it cause suffering to you and others? You can find out. A selfish people, are they happy? A violent people, angry people, full of envy, jealousy, and hatred, are they happy? Deluded people, are they happy? They all create problem and suffering. Whereas people who have good mind, wholesome mind, free of the evil roots, have wholesomeness, have kindness, gentleness, good speech, right action, right livelihood, and right thought, and beautiful thought. They have a lot of gratitude, sincerity, honesty. Such beings are beautiful because they are really sincere, very kind, very honest. They have a lot of gratitude. They have a lot of contentment. They respect people for what they are. And they have gratitude towards those who have helped them. Or they know how to rejoice with those who know how to do all those wholesome things. So these are the mind state that you must have. That's why the Buddha said, you must cultivate with right effort all of the right thought, wholesome thought, that bring about harmony, love, compassion, goodness, kindness. So mind states are very important. All these mind states are free of the evil root. That's why they are beautiful. Can follow? Okay. Then Dhammapada verse 183 is the famous verse of the Buddha. All Buddha, they teach the same. These are the advice of all Buddha. You all read, eh? You better get this understood. All of Dhamma cultivation is just to do these three things. Are you cultivating this? The word is all evil is to be avoided, not just avoid evil, no, all evil if you want to have good life. Otherwise, I tell you, law of karma is very powerful. We cannot even tolerate one evil. So the cultivator of the way, they are very wary of their mind state. They are chitena. They will never violate. Because it's not worthwhile to violate this nature's law, law of karma. Then they do not really allow delusion to set in. Because when delusion sets in, self-delusion especially, then the egoic mind come about. With the egoic mind, selfishness will come. Because you think you exist, then you want to own and possess. That's why you become selfish. Then you can become angry, emotional, unhappy. You can develop jealousy. That's why the evil root of greed and hatred come to be. Then when things go wrong, you can have fear, worry, anxiety. Now this is delusion. So the three evil roots come from the self, the atta that is created through delusion. So when you understand, then you will heed the advice of the Buddha. You will make haste to avoid all evil good, so that your karmic nature can become beautiful, so that every life you come, you are beautiful. Then you develop wisdom so that you don't have to suffer the First Noble Truth reality. Then Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23. Okay, you read this one, we finish. Yeah? Verse 21, you all read. So what do you understand from this Dhammapada verse? What is your choice? Choose to be heedful. The moment you are heedful, what happened? Dhammapada verse 22, you read.
The wise intend on heedfulness and enjoy
See, you want to be enlightened being Aryas, you have to intend on heedfulness. The wise word, intend on heedfulness, because they are no longer deluded. If you still don't know how to intend on heedfulness and cultivate, then you are not the wise one. Understand? Okay, verse 23, you read. This is what heedfulness is all about. So this verse 23 is very clear that if you can do this every day, constantly meditative, ever mindful, then hold on to these two cultivations, the steadfast one. They will definitely realize the bond-free Nibbana. The Buddha assure you, understand? Which means this is heedfulness, understand? That the heedful never die. Understand? The heedful never die. And heedfulness is the path to the deathless. That's why you will realize the enlightenment. So all this make it very clear that meditation is about training your mind to be heedful. That's it. Forget about all those method, technique, and what people tell you. Understand? Wow, this meditation experience. Oh, I can go through wall. I can levitate. I can read your mind. I can produce light energy. What are you doing? The Buddha just talk about heedfulness. To be heedful is to develop wisdom, understanding of life. And then no more suffering. But all those psychic and fantastic meditation, they still have to die. Understand? They still have to experience the First Noble Truth reality. And they still have suffering. So what do you choose? Choose to be famous and become miserable? Or you want to choose to be wise so that every life you come, you are beautiful? So it's very clear. Understand? Then you go on. Before the Buddha passed away, the Buddha's advice before his parinibbana, the final advice, apamadena sampadeta, read it loud, strive on, because the note is, the heedful never die, eternalize spiritually. The heedless are as if dead spiritually. Means you may be alive, you know, conscious of life, but spiritually you are dead, if you are heedless. That's why no point living. You know what is spiritually dead? No chance for enlightenment. And that type of life you want. Heedless throughout. And misery. And then the final summary of the First Noble Truth, all this you go and read yourself. I think we end this morning because it's almost 12 o'clock lunch. Then you can... Okay, we got a few minutes. You got any question or not? Maybe I can take one. Any question? So far, clear or not? If it's not clear, you can ask. So after the lunch, you will have your break, 12:30 to 1:30. You can rest and clean up as before. Then try to maintain daily mindfulness training and Dhamma contemplation at all times, even during resting. Then 1:30, we will meet here again. Then we will have our another session of puja, followed by briefing.
Brother Teo, there's a question from Christina.
Good. Christine, you can ask.
Brother Teo, I'd like to know what's the difference between Nirvana and Nibbana.
It's the same. It's spelled differently. Nirvana and Nibbana is the same because the Ceylonis, Pali, they use Nibbana, whereas the Mahayana Mandarin, they use Nirvana. It's the same. It means, Sanskrit. But the Mahayana follow Sanskrit. So it's the same meaning. Okay? Yeah. Yes. Can. Yeah. Use the mic. Okay.
Those who are going to clean up the shrine hall, it's easier for them. Thank you.